Well, hello. This series of discussions is designed to help pastors, church leaders, and ministry volunteers to learn how they can train, screen, protect, report, and care. At BCMD, we're committed to helping every church become a safe place for children, youth, and vulnerable adults. More information can be found at the Pathways page on our website so that you can learn more about how you can reduce the risk of sexual abuse in your church. So I'm Keith Meyer, pastor of Harvest Baptist Church. I'm an associational missionary for the Eastern Baptist Association, and I get to be chair of the Sexual Abuse Task Force for BCMD.
And I'm Chris Buckman, kids and youth missionary for the Baptist Convention of Maryland, Delaware, and a member of the Sexual Abuse Task Force.
Chris, our topic today is the second of the five areas that we've laid out. And so we've already had a discussion about training, but we're talking about screening. So we're discussing best practices and principles for screening staff and volunteers. Why is this such an important step?
Screening should be our first line of defense as far as prevention goes. It's our best line of defense. So we want to make sure we screen people before we allow them to serve with kids, students, or vulnerable adults. We need to determine their suitability for ministry service in their church, in your church, and make sure they're compatible with your beliefs and your policies. A good screening program lowers the risk of abuse and increases safety. And it just demonstrates a high barrier of protection should someone come to the church wishing to do ill harm. And in today's fast-paced environment, we can't skip over or fast-track people through the process simply because our church is in dire need of volunteers or because we already know them. Statistics tell us that 90% of kids who are sexually abused are done so by people they know and trust. And so kids assume that the people that we allow to teach them and lead them in our ministries are someone that are known and trusted. So it's important for everyone to go through the same screening process also to eliminate any kinds of discrimination. But there's several elements that make up a good solid screening process. And we've seen churches have bits and pieces of them, but not always all of them all together that really builds a much better, higher barrier of protection.
So we've got five best practices for implementing thorough screening. Before we get to those practices, there's one principle that you have say is important that is in place before we even get to screening. What is that? What's that principle?
That's the principle that we have somebody either be an attender or a member of our church for 6 months. And I usually tell churches that's up to you whether you want them to be members or attenders, but having them be in your church for at least 6 months just gives you the opportunity to observe their interactions, how they build relationships with other people in the congregation, how they act around children, how they act around students. And it allows you to build some certain level of trust and familiarity with people before you jump into that whole screening process when they say we'd like to now serve.
The idea is to have that buffer period where you're able to say how long, what are these people like, right? It's so it's important that it be 6 months, that it's a significant amount of time, both to keep people with ill intent away, and also to give you an opportunity to observe their behavior, if I understand you correctly.
Yeah, exactly. If someone wants to come right in and say, I just moved into the area and I'd love to serve with kids. We don't want to allow them to serve starting next week. We don't know them at all. And so at least 6 months is the best recommendation.
Right. That's good. Okay, so moving on to the components of the screening program, what's up first?
So first, the first of five is a written application. And so this is just something written down. They're standard questions, allows you to get information about address history, past employment, past or present volunteer history. And so it's an important that it allows you to just tell people that we actually have a process, having it written down, and once they fill it out and document it and keep that in their file, it just is proof that you actually have a screening process set up. And it also should have some sort of disclaimer at the end that's going to allow them that any information on that form that they've completed, you have the right to call or to find or to check up on, and then to ask for references as well.
There's a bunch of reasons why it's important to actually have this documentation, right? And not just have it verbally. What are some of the reasons why it's important to have a written application?
Well, written application are things, anything that's documented are things that we can go back and lean on to if should we need to. So having things just verbally aren't things that are gonna show proof of our screening process. So it's important that we do actually have it written down and kept and documented somewhere. Should we ever need to go back and say, nope, yeah, this is exactly what you told us and what you signed here. And so for that reason, it is important to have it written down and to keep it.
Okay. Yeah. The second thing that you recommend is reference checks.
Right. So in the written application, we're getting information from the candidate themselves. In the reference checks, we're going to go out and get information from other people about that candidate. And so reference checks are important. They're extremely helpful to the screening process, and they verify that people are who they say they are. We typically recommend that they get 3 references. One can be a family member, one can be a prior church or where they served with students before, one can be an employer. And typically we want to have at least 1 male and 1 female, not all females, not all males, so that we can kind of just get information, the best information that we can from all different sources. It's not to say that if somebody completes your application and list several churches that they serve at, but none of those churches are listed in the references. If they've signed that disclaimer on the application, then you can call those other churches if you don't feel you have enough information from the references they gave you. So that's, these two things kind of work hand in hand. And so it's important to gather the information and then actually follow through on the reference checks. They can be very helpful.
Yeah, that's good. What kind of questions should we ask? Is there anything that we're really driving at when we ask a reference, when we ask somebody for a reference, what are we pushing for?
Yeah. So basically the bottom line, what we want to know is, do you have any issues with this person serving with kids or youth or wherever the candidate is applying to serve in? Would you feel comfortable leaving your own children with this person? Do you have anything that may be of concern if this person were to serve in our ministry with kids and youth? That's really kind of the bottom line that what you're looking for. And just getting information that lines up with what they said in their written application, making sure all the dots connect.
That's good. That's good. So our third area or third component is background checks.
Yes. Background checks. So, and a lot of times this is definitely the one that churches are like, we do this on everybody, and they're really great at running these. The problem is when it becomes the standalone, the only leg of their screening process, that's when it becomes a problem. Because background checks are only going to give you information from what is on file with our government system. Confirmation of residency, if they've ever been charged with a crime. A lot of times our insurance companies require it, so we do have to do it, but it really just doesn't give us basically any information. If there's nothing in their history, we basically just get a confirmation of previous addresses lived. And so that's why it's really important that we kind of gather information from multiple sources to really get to know who it is that we are allowing served with our kids and our youth.
If background checks are so problematic or limited, is there a reason, like, why run them at all?
Yeah, I think it's become the standard when we say we're screening people as a background check. And a lot of times, as I said, your insurance companies are probably requiring that you do that. But I also think that some churches just aren't aware of other screening mechanisms. That may be the only one that they're aware of. And so they're running them diligently, but they just can't be something that we rely on solely as a screening process.
Right. One of the things that I have thought in the past is that it's possible that, you know, that somebody who has a history, that they will defer, and they will say, hey, they run background checks here. I'm knowing what would come up on their check, they're not going to they're not gonna attempt to settle in at that church. So that's a I do think that's a valid reason for still running them, even understanding that there are some gaps in the information. I think that you said this on another occasion, that it's not any single screening method, it's all of them stacked together that increases the effectiveness of them. So we've got number four. This is it's interesting. It feels very obvious, but it really makes sense, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a formal screening method, but you suggest a social media review.
Yeah, just a basic internet search and social media review. I always joke around. I always use my boys as an example. If they come home and tell me they're going out on a date with some girl, like by the time they get home from that date, I can tell them probably more about that girl than they know about that girl, just by doing simple internet, Google, social media searches on somebody. So we do that so many times in other cases. It's helpful to do that in this case. We know so many times people are one person on social media and another person in person. So I think it's important to do those checks. Like you said, it's nothing formal, like a formal process or a company does it for you. I'm sure there probably are, but just getting in there and just Googling people and saying, what's out there? What, you know, what's going on? Because it's just information from yet another source about somebody that you can put together all the pieces of the puzzle and really have a clear look at who you're dealing with.
Right. And so when we're doing a social media interview, we're looking for hey, maybe this person is saying inappropriate things or posting explicit images or has a tendency of being combative or difficult when they interact with people. And those might be things that are red flags. What do we do with what we've found in a social media interview? How do we apply it?
So I think notating any concerns that you have in that review process, but then that really kind of the answer to that question kind of falls into the last piece, the personal interview. So having a personal interview with someone allows you to sit down face to face and ask them questions about maybe things that you have that came up on the written application with a reference call, on the background check, in the social media review. So you can review, and it's important to kind of do them in those steps so that you can finally take all of that information, put the pieces together. If things don't line up, this is your chance to sit down with someone and ask them some questions face to face and get that body reaction and just, you know, how people respond and how they react and how they answer gives us a lot of information. So that interview is information that you're getting from yourself. And we do recommend having another person in that interview with you. So there's accountability there. And so you get two people's perspective on their response and their answers to things. So the personal interview is very beneficial. They don't have to be long, hour-long interviews. But if you have questions, that's your time to answer them. It gives you a time. If you say this is in our screening process, it's the last step, then people know that that's coming. And that if things don't line up, you know, there'll be a chance for them to ask questions about your church. So it's really an important piece to the entire screening process and just gives you a chance to really, really finalize your thoughts on somebody.
Yeah, I think what's powerful about this this screen that you've set up, right, is first you've got this waiting period that delays immediate access, but then you also have a very intentional process of saying, are there obvious problems with somebody who says that they want to work with children? And unless you've got it all lined up, right? You know, unless it's lined up and it's intentional, it's easy to overlook things that we should have paid attention to. So I think that is, I think that's powerful. What if somebody needs more help if they've listened to this and they've said, I don't know what interview questions to ask, or I don't know anything about social media. How do I do a social media review? What should they do?
Yeah, so we have a great resource page at bcmd.org/pathways. If you click on the link for churches, we have lots of resources that will help you in the screening process. And they can always reach out to me or to you. We do have questions that they can ask in an interview, questions to ask references, forms for all of that documentation. We have written applications ready to go for you to use if you want to use those. So we have lots of resources for you as you build this screening system into your church's policies. So we can walk alongside with you every step of the way and give you everything that you need.
That's great. That's great. Well, we're going to be back next time, and we're going to be talking about policies that protect. Until then, she's Chris Buckman. I'm Keith Meyer, and it's an honor to serve. And we hope that you'll reach out if you've got any questions or any needs. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Keith.
Bye-bye.